total, and I might indicate immoral, control of the beast very quickly. Because we need to understand that it's not just a mark. It is a worshipful mark. Here is what Revelation 14 says. It said, the third angel followed, said with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast and his image, and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God. And they will have no rest, day nor night, who worship the beast and his image, and who receive the mark of his name. Here, my friends, is the patience of the saints, they that keep the commandments of God, and the faith of Jesus. I hope that's you, and that's the reason we bring it up here today. Not to scare you, but to increase your faith. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not in your own understanding. Friends, get any of those books that we talked about, The Secret of the Lord, King of the Mountain, Power of Hospitality, Out of Egypt, and become a partner. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries today. Do it today. God bless you.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Christian and Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, hopefully they're going to be the views of Phyllis Schlafly with us for this next hour. And Phyllis is really one of the most amazing people I know. I've known her for the better part of 50 years, and she's been on the front lines of this battle for the survival of Christian civilization all that time. Hi, Phyllis. How are we doing today?
Hello, Dr. Stan. Always good to talk to you.
Well, it's always good to talk to you, and I really think I should get you on much more often. But anyway, what are we going to be talking about tonight? Because I know you're on the front lines of this battle for the very survival of our form of civilization.
Well, the blast I put out this week was, I think, the Obama administration, trying to take our eyes off the ball, has been pushing his pre-K, which stands for government care of preschool or pre-kindergarten kids, as a new middle-class entitlement and for everybody. And they're trying to push that as the new expenditure and claiming that it's going to raise their scores on international tests and do all sorts of wonderful things.
Well, but why would they, basically because of the government's form of education, why we're way down as far as our education is concerned? Our kids can't compete with kids from other countries because, of course, government schools dumb them down. What you need is children who have a relationship with their parents, and suddenly basically what we're doing is substituting the state for the parents.
Well, their idea is that parents are too incompetent to do the job, and we need wonderful bureaucrats and government employees to take care of them at least by the time of their fourth birthday. But you know, they've been using all these years their model of the Perry Preschool Project, which was 50 years ago in Ypsilanti, Michigan. I think that's where Ypsilanti is. And they bragged about how well the kids did in that, and that's supposed to be a model for everything. But you know, a little bit of new information has just come out that I think is just really devastating. There were only 123 kids in the project. This was 50 years ago. The success of it has never been replicated. But now we learn the sensational news that all of the 103 kids had stay-at-home moms. And, you know, for 50 years, nobody's let us know that. And it certainly is the difference in raising children if they've got a stay-at-home mom.
But I think that the thing is that basically they want to get the children dependent upon the state or from under the influence of the parents, because these people have a different view. They believe the government can regulate and should regulate everything. They don't believe in individual freedom. They don't believe in God. Certainly the state is to replace God and government and parent.
Yes, that's exactly what they want to do, and that's why they want to get them early. Because they think that getting them at the first grade when they're five or six, that won't do. They've got to get them earlier when they're four.
Well, I hope, Cindy, first of all, we don't have the money for
a government program. No, of course we don't have the money.
And the fact, basically, they're having to borrow almost $1 trillion a year. And faced with that, what we should be doing is dramatically cutting back on these government programs. And now they want a new program? Well, what madness is there in Washington, D.C.?
Well, they think they can just borrow more from China and go ahead and spend it.
But I think China's getting sick and tired of lending to us. In fact, they're trying to get rid of their dollars right now. We're going to be back in just a moment with Phyllis Schlafly.
Okay.
Right here in Ruby.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at a reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden, all heirloom and all ready for you to create that special necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 808-982-7782 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 808-982-7782 right now and order seed for this year's garden. It's fast and easy. There's quick shipping, too. That's 808-982-7782.
And the winner of fallback pricing is you. The results are in from Freeze Dry Guy's You Be the Boss, Tell Us What You Want Us to Put on Sale campaign. After getting phone calls, emails, blog, and Facebook comments nominating your favorite freeze-dried foods and dehydrated foods, you the people, you the bosses have spoken. We the staff at Freeze Dry Guy have listened, as we've done since 1970. So now, one item and one entire line of food are on special sale until the end of October. The entire line of popular non-GMO and gluten-free foods are 20% off. The Family First Responders Kit, loaded with delicious freeze-dried foods like hearty beef stew, lasagna, and mouth-watering strawberries, is roughly 30% off. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com to order or call 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD, and make your own deal. Thank you, boss.
This is Dr. Stan and Phyllis. Ellis has just been talking about this program they did 50 years ago. In contemporary dollars, it would be about $19,000 a year per student, starting them certainly in preschool, before kindergarten, starting them in the fourth grade so they can get them 2 years more. All the benefits that they get from the program were gone by the end of the first grade, and yet now the Obama administration wants to certainly bring in another program similar to that into our educational system. Where is the money coming from? Shall we start cutting the salaries of our congressmen and presidents? And we understand Mrs. Obama took a trip overseas someplace, took about 40 guests along with her. It cost, you know, a couple of $100 million or close to $100 million for this little trip of vacation for 3 or 4 weeks for the president's wife and all of her friends overseas, where they simply put them up. But these people don't seem to have any sense of the value of money. I mean, we do not have the money, and besides that, it is not the function of the federal government to provide for the education. If you believe in the Constitution, matters having to do with life, liberty, and property to be taken care of at the state and the local level, the federal government should never be involved in the education of our children, because, of course, if you had wicked people there, they could destroy an entire generation of our youth.
That's what they're doing, and they want to train them to look to the government for the solution to all their problems and all the kind of guidance, and they don't want them to look to their parents. You remember when we went through the phase called values clarification, and that meant cast off your parents' values. They're old-fashioned and out-of-date, and learn the new values that we're going to teach you in school. But you know, Dr. Stan, you and I have been complaining about what they've been doing in the public schools for years through all these different fads they had, like values clarification, full language, school to work, their fake history standards, and all those things. And we tried to tell the parents what was going on, and it really was very hard to get people excited. But an amazing thing has happened. Now that they've come in with a Common Core standard, moms are coming out of the woodwork to say, we don't want this. It is the most amazing grassroots action I've seen in just years of being active in politics. And they don't like it. They think it's federal control. It's a national standard. And it's controlling what's taught by means of the tests. The tests that are prescribed that you have to give to the kids are their mechanism of control. And Arnie Duncan even threatened your state of California that if you don't use these tests, we're going to cut off all your federal money, which is a big hunk of money for a big state like California.
Well, I would hope that California would have the courage to say, well, we don't want your money, but unfortunately, that's not the way things work. Most of the states will do anything to get the money, and then, unfortunately, why it comes with it, all the government controls, which is what is progressively destroying the very fabric of our society, and certainly the moral structure of our society. Look and see what's happening to the moral structure of our society. Look at all the violence that we're having, certainly turning against, away from moral standards. 42% of white children, 72% of black children are born out of wedlock. What happened to morality? What happened to the family? And now the government wants more control of our children? What madness is that?
Yes, you're right. But with this Common Core curriculum coming in, I really think parents are waking up. And, of course, really, we have a couple of generations now of parents who really haven't learned much themselves, because these problems with the public schools didn't just start last week. But nevertheless, they recognize that something's wrong. And they know that when kids are coming home with math homework that the parents can't deal with. It makes no sense. I've seen some of the questions, and they really make no sense. They try to tell the child they can create new ways of adding and subtracting and multiplying. Now, our greater minds than our kids have already figured out the best way to add and subtract. And the idea that some little kid is going to invent some new way to do it is just nuts.
Well, it's not only nuts, but basically I'm really very much afraid that they're intentionally dumbing down our children. And anybody who questions that or is only to look at the scores when they compare our children with children from other schools, Lithuania and Latvia, these children are all, you know, they do their testing when they graduate from high school. They compare our children with children from throughout the world. I think we're number 19, right along with Lithuania and Latvia. And basically, and this is a result of the federal government interference in the educational system.
Yes, and the control of the National Education Association, the big teachers union, which I think is the most powerful organization that's fighting everything you and I believe in. You know, we're the only conservative organization that sends an observer to their annual convention, which is always over the 4th of July weekend. And we report on their radical resolutions. And they always have about a dozen resolutions that are the feminist resolutions and about a dozen that are the homosexual resolutions and then about a dozen that are anti-parent resolutions. And then they're also promoting global education, the citizen of the world, and that kind of stuff. And people ought to know what the National Education Association stands for and what they vote for. And every year, a little group of pro-lifers, some of the pro-life teachers, try to get a resolution passed. Not to make the NEA pro-life, that would be impossible, but just to make it neutral on the whole issue of pro-life. And usually motion is held out of order and not allowed to come to a vote.
Well, now, is this the union? What is this?
Yes, it's the union.
Okay, and I think it's vitally important, but basically a lot of the teachers are forced to join the union so they can get their, you know, get their jobs. But basically the teachers should not be forced to join the unions, because I think the attitude of the unions is far different than the attitude of the average teacher. Don't you, Phyllis?
Yes, I do, and the forcing the teachers to join the union varies from state to state. Some states are right-to-work states and some are not. But the union is very powerful anyway.
Well, basically what is going to happen as far as this effort to have the children start going to government schools or government control when they're 4 years of age, what's going to happen to that, and how can our listeners out there certainly oppose that?
Well, what I did, when I realized they were no longer teaching children to read in the first grade, which I realized because of reading a very remarkable book, called Why Johnny Can't Read by Rudolf Flesch, and which came out just at the time when my first child was ready for school. And so I followed the instructions that he recommended, got a phonics book, and taught my children how to read before I ever let them go to school. And then my children only started in school in the second grade, but they already knew how to read better than anybody else in the class. And that is what I recommend. And the books that I use with my children are they allowed to go out of print, because the teachers union is so much against really teaching them how to read. That is, teaching them the sounds and syllables of the English language so you can put them together and make big words like hippopotamus or alligator. And so I wrote my own book, and it's called First Reader. It's available on my website, eagleforum.org, or firstreader.com. I think you can get it also, too. And it's a 100% phonics speech lesson, and you can teach your own child to read, but you really ought to do it before they teach them the wrong methods that they are teaching them in school, which is to guess at the words by looking at the picture.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get your website, and because our guest is Phyllis Schlafly, her organization is the Eagle Forum. How can people get your website?
Well, my website is eagleforum.org, and it's the goldmine of wonderful information. It has all my latest comments about the where we started out our program, talking about Obama's push for a new middle-class entitlement, which is to give pre-K or pre-kindergarten classes for all children. And you will find all kinds of information about all of the big issues, Obamacare, how he is dismantling our anti-missile defenses, the immigration issue, other issues that you care about will be on my website. But you can also go to firstreader.com and order my phonic book, Teach Your Own Child to Read.
Okay, they can actually get that then through your website. Now, basically, of course, did you have a section there on Common Core? Common Core, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know, essentially is the new educational program being forced upon every school district in this country by the federal government, and certainly with the threat of cutting off certainly federal money if school districts will not implement this. And basically, this is even more in the process of holding the children back and dumbing them down. And certainly, Phyllis has been an outspoken a critic of this and certainly trying to expose it. Maybe when we get back here, while we could get into the background of Common Core, because I think it is such a major factor, and it is going to do even more harm to our children, don't you?
Yes, I certainly do, and it's they're not learning. They're just being treated like little dummies.
And people say, well, why would anybody be against educating children? It's because when you want a totalitarian society, and there really are people who want a totalitarian society, you don't want people who can think, who can reason, who can really value these ideas of freedom and liberty, these ethereal ideas, which is the very essence of what America is about today.
Cancer was a rare disease 100 years ago, but that isn't true today. A recent study reveals 38% of American women and over 42% of American men either have or will develop cancer during their lifetime, and many will die from that disease. Why has the incidence of cancer increased? Well, most people eat processed food, and processed food contains toxic substances, and the vitamin, mineral, and antioxidant content of processed foods is altered during preparation. What can you do? Most diets are deficient in magnesium, iodine, vitamin C, vitamin D3, antioxidants, and other essential nutrients. So Radio Liberty offers the supplements you need to maintain your health. If you'd like a list of our products or a catalog, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. And our website is radioliberty.com.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it, taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order to...
They were baited into it by saying that, baby, you can keep for a pot of federal handout if you sign on to it. And, of course, they all didn't get the handout, but 45 signed up, and a lot of them are trying to get out of it now.
Well, I think it's going to be a terrible, terrible disaster. But basically, of course, I think you're absolutely right. It's going to be utilized to try to indoctrinate our young people into this idea that certainly if there's a problem, the government should take care of it. Certainly we need more government to provide for the people and for the welfare of the people. Whereas exactly the opposite is the case. Certainly we need welfare programs, but they should be at the local level, never at the national level. We never want our people to be dependent upon government, because once people are dependent upon government and government begins providing for them, governments must be able to control them. And there really are people who want an authoritarian society. Don't you believe that, Phyllis?
I certainly do. And you have to, people need to realize how different America is from other countries in the world. And I, in my Phyllis Schlafly report of November, and you know I've been writing this report for 46 years, and I'm still writing it. But at any rate, the November one has reports of some very recent polling that shows the difference in attitudes of a lot of the immigrants coming in, whether they're legal or illegal. And they are coming from countries where the government basically decides everything. And they don't know anything other than that. They don't even understand our concept of limited government and balanced budgets and that sort of thing. And so they're asking the question, would you rather have big government providing more services, or would you rather have a smaller government spending less money? And most of the immigrants...
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Phyllis is just talking about certainly a survey of a lot of the immigrants coming to America. People coming to America from societies where the government provides for the people from the cradle to the grave, but these are socialist countries and the people have no freedom. And as they begin to poll these people, suddenly are these people coming into America from other countries, what do they find that these people want, Phyllis?
Well, they think they should look to the government for services. You know, most of these other countries, when they write a constitution, the constitution lists all the goody things that government is going to do for you. And of course, you're familiar with our constitution. It's basically a list of things the government cannot do to us. So it's a whole different attitude.
And that's exactly right. Basically, in the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, limits the power, specifically states that any power not specifically herein given to Congress is to be limited to the states and to the people. And the whole idea is to limit the power of government. Let matters dealing with life, liberty, and property be taken care of at the state level. But you never want an all-powerful federal government, because you can't change it. So if you live in a state where they have such a... corruption and taking advantage of the people, why, you can always move to another state. But when the federal government is doing exactly that and controlling the people and exploiting them, then what do? You have to move to another country. And the beauty in this, really the secret of America, was the fact that we were to be a nation where the power of the central government was to be limited by the chains of the Constitution. But they never teach that in schools today. And most of our young people don't understand what's wrong with socialism. I know, because when I went through school, I came out a dedicated socialist, because nobody ever told me about the Constitution. Nobody ever told me that our founding fathers feared the power of government and wanted to limit that power so men could be free.
That's right. So you ask these immigrants, would you rather have a big government offering you more services, or would you rather have a limited government who would be restrained about its spending? They'll all pick the former. They want the services that government will provide, and they think that's good. And, of course, this is what has been building a society of people dependent on government. And we have now nearly half of the population who are getting all or part of their living expenses from some type of a government handout. The Heritage Foundation did a study and found, I think, that there were 79 different handout programs that give to people, and they think they're entitled to it, and they think jolly big government's going to take care of it.
And basically, I think it's been estimated that, well, almost 50% of our people, 49%, are getting some sort of a government stipend of one sort or another. Social Security, Medicare, food stamps, housing allowances, all of these are wonderful things that they're offering. But, of course, with it comes the progressive loss of freedom. And right now, of course, we're in a situation where we have a bankrupt nation. We're having to borrow $1 trillion a year to maintain this, our standard of living, and when they cut back on that, the whole thing is going to collapse. There's no better way to destroy a nation than to destroy it economically. And there seem to be people in Washington, D.C., perhaps even in the White House itself, that want to destroy the structure of our nation and replace it with a different type of government. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question for Phyllis, go right ahead, Phyllis.
That is the difference, because America is a very exceptional country, and we were built on different principles. The principle that government is to be the servant of the people, not our boss. And it used to be the immigrants who came to our country. I have a lot of friends who, when they arrived at Ellis Island, their father would give a lecture to the kids and say, now we're in America, and we're going to be Americans, and we're going to speak English, and this is our country. But that isn't the way a lot of the immigrants feel today. And they bring a lot of their socialist notions with them, thinking that the government should be the one who is the source of all goodies.
But, of course, what people don't understand is that the government doesn't have enough money to provide something for everybody. When we started Social Security, why, there were 56 people working for every person who was getting Social Security back in 1936 and 37. Today, there's about 2 people working for every person getting Social Security. And pretty soon, there are going to be people, 3 or 4 people retired for every person working, and the whole system is going to collapse. There is no way that this system can continue going where it's going, and basically then the country will go financially bankrupt. We will have to form a different form of government, and freedom as we know it will simply become a remembrance of things past. People say it couldn't happen here, and I would say, why not? When a nation turns against God, God turns against that nation. Phyllis, you go right ahead.
I am concerned about that. I have children and grandchildren, and I want them to grow up in a free country. Dr. Stan, I hear from our members all over the country, and I will say a lot of our people are very depressed. They really think that Obama has taken us past the point of no return. And the children and grandchildren are never going to have the kind of country you and I grew up in. But I'm not a pessimist like that. I've got to be an optimist, and I believe we can turn things around. And that's why I use as an example the 10-year fight I waged to defeat the Equal Rights Amendment. You know, I had everybody against me. I just think of it. 3 presidents, 3 first ladies, every senator except 1, every House member except 3, every governor, some of them demonstrated against us, Hollywood, women's organizations, the media, and they were all against us. And then even people who liked me and who would be inclined to help me didn't believe we could win. And it was a great feeling of defeatism. But we beat them all. And it's really quite an inspiring example of how the grassroots can rise up and defeat something bad that's coming down the pike and defeat the whole gang of them. And this was pre-internet and pre-tweaking your cell phones, and we didn't even have fax machines then. But we were able to beat everybody. And I think it's a great example, which should give people encouragement today know that the grassroots can rise up and turn our country around. We certainly missed a big opportunity in the election last year when we let the country re-elect Barack Obama. But we've got another crack at trying again next year when we have the opportunity to elect a Republican Senate, and that would change the whole picture.
Well, this is Artist Dan. I guess it's Phyllis Schlafly. And Phyllis Schlafly was saying that a lot of people are pessimistic today, but she's not pessimistic because she remembers what happened with the Equal Rights Amendment. Now, many of our listeners probably don't even remember the Equal Rights Amendment battle, but this is certainly where Phyllis came to national prominence. And this was, what, 40 years ago, 45 years ago?
Right. The big fight was 1972 to 1982.
Okay, 1972 to 1982. Well, basically, of course, almost all of the Senate and almost all the congressmen and all these people were certainly in favor of the Equal Rights Amendment. It was going to be an amendment to the Constitution. And certainly, but Phyllis took on the battle, certainly of blocking and trying to keep a number of the states had already passed the amendment.
Oh, yeah, they had a head start of 30 states.
Yeah, 30 states, and they needed, what, three-quarters of the
38.
State?
38.
Right. And basically, Phyllis set out then to block them from doing it, and with literally no help from hardly anybody, certainly not from the politicians. The media was against her. Certainly the many conservative organizations didn't want to get involved in the battle because it was hopeless. And almost single-handedly, I would say not almost, but totally single-handedly, Phyllis Schlafly was able to raise a groundswell of support and block them from getting their 38 states, and the Equal Rights Amendment died. And that's certainly, as she's carrying this forward to now, we need to do something very similar, and I certainly agree with that, certainly, but how are we going to get the people involved? This is the thing. As you know, I do 5 hours of talk radio a day, trying to get people, and I know we have thousands of listeners all across America, who are well aware of what's going on. But they really need leadership. Somebody has to tell them what to do. What should people be doing today, Phyllis, to try to take America back and preserve our society of freedom?
Well, I think they should be active in politics. And I know a lot of people think politics is a dirty business, but that's the process of self-government, and we need you. Now, as Secretary Rumsfeld once said, when you go to war, you have to go to war with the army you have, not the army you wish you had. And we have a two-party system in this country. And you may think it'd be better if we had a third party, but it isn't going to happen in our lifetime. Take my word for it. And it's a two-party system. And if you want to be active, you've got to be in one of the parties. Decide which one is more close to your point of view, and then get active in it. And then the primaries coming up next year are absolutely so essential because, you know, when people get to November, they say, well, I don't like either one playing on both their houses. It's because you didn't get active in the primary and get the good guys on the ballot. And they're not going to get elected unless they're on the ballot, and you have to be active in the primary in order to get them on the ballot. So I urge everybody to get busy, to go into the Republican primary next year and get the good guys on the ballot who believe in the Constitution, who believe in America. And I think we can take it over and have a different crowd running things for us, which would be a tremendous improvement.
Well, I think that basically people need to start now finding out who the responsible people are. Now, right now, the establishment is pushing Christie, you know, I think of New Jersey, basically. He's one of their people, and they'll run it. It'll be like McCain running against McCain running against Obama or Romney running against Obama. I'm not sure it would make that much of a difference, certainly. But right now, certainly there was no difference between McCain and Obama. McCain was the most liberal a Republican senator in the United States Senate, and they run him against a liberal Democrat? I mean, what sort of an election is that?
Well, the establishment establishment of the Republican Party has given us a series of losers, Bob Dole and John McCain and Mitt Romney. And they were not the best candidates. But anyway, the establishment pushed them on. because the establishment in the Republican Party, they're, well, like the Bushes. They're New World Order types. They're globalists. They like to decide about having our economy kind of run by the World Trade Organization, and so that they can have their free trade and use the cheap labor in Asia and so forth. So we have a fight that I called a choice, not an echo, when we started out with the conservative movement, and we do have a fight within the Republican Party, and we need the grassroots to rise up and say, oh, we're going to have good candidates who speak out and say the right things, not just ones who say me too to whatever the Democrats want.
Well, I think that nobody's going to want to run for political office unless they know they have people who are willing to get in and work for them and help to fund them. And basically, of course, we're not going to find any multimillionaires wanting to run who will espouse our philosophy. What we need are people who believe in individual freedom, and they need to have a massive amount of support. And then another thing I am concerned about, Phyllis, are the electronic voting machines. I don't know if there's any way you can tell when they're done, honestly. I think we need to get back simply to paper ballots, where we have human beings counting that rather than the electronics, because I do not trust the electronic voting machines. How do you feel about them?
Well, I agree with you. I don't trust them either, and I think paper ballots are better. And so, you know, when there was that contest in Minnesota for Sharpton, and they did a recount. They did a recount, and then they said he won by just a few votes. And then they found that there were more illegal votes cast, and they only discovered that after the election was decided. And so we unfortunately do have some people who've been illegally elected. And I think ballot security is just a very big issue in this country. And unfortunately, a lot of our people don't really believe it's happening. For example, I live in a precinct where there's probably nobody stealing ballots. But the people who steal the ballots go to the precinct where they probably, the Democrats already are 10 to 1, and they shoot it up to 50 to 1. And I just think we ought to have photo ID to show it. Every time I go to a hotel, I'm made to show photo ID. I don't know what's the matter. You really have to show it practically every time you turn around, except when you vote.
I think I share your concern. I think the voting is so important. It has to be done honestly. And I'm not certain if really it is done honestly. And I think that until the American people demand this and begin talking about this and begin talking about the studies that show there's not one of those electronic voting machines that can't be rigged. And I will tell you that there were an awful lot of voting irregularities a year ago in November when Barack Obama became president. There were some precincts with 1,000 people registered and 1,500 votes for Barack Hussein Obama. And if you can explain to me how that happened, why I'd certainly like to hear about it. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But people have forgotten what happened after the election last year. I mean, there were people beginning to talk about the voting irregularities, and then suddenly we heard about this terrible scandal. It involved General Petraeus, the director of the CIA. And they'd been listening to his telephone calls. Now, did they have a warrant to listen to the conversations of the director of the CIA? No, of course they didn't have. But, of course, they were listening to it, and then they brought out the fact he was having an illicit sexual affair. And so all of our attention was taken away from the voting irregularities to that General Petraeus, a former Secretary of Defense, a former chairman. Actually, at that time, he was the director of the CIA involved with a woman who was not his wife. And all of the newspapers were talking about that, and nobody talked about, certainly, about the voting irregularities that occurred that put Barack Hussein Obama back in the presidency. We have Ron calling us from Richland, Washington. Our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, but nothing is going to change as far as the elections and the electronic voting machines are concerned unless the people are willing to stand up and be counted and start talking about this and about the irregularities that took place a year ago in November. Fellas, how are we going to get people to really get involved, not only with the voting process, but with beginning to pick candidates? Do you have anybody that you think people should be getting behind at the present time, looking certainly for the presidency in 2016 and for the Senate and Congress next November?
Well, I'm not ready to pick the person I'm going to back for president yet, but I will tell you I do like Ted Cruz. He's a straight talker. He has the courage to speak out against the Democrat policies that are so disastrous. And I think somebody who will speak out like that and will be a real leader is what we want. Now, don't take that as an endorsement. I'm not ready to endorse anybody yet. But this is a time when we should look them all over and make a decision and then coach them, really, to tell them what we want them to say and believe in when they run for office.
Okay, well, let's go to Ron, who's calling us from Richland, Washington. Get our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest is Phyllis Schlafly. Ron, do you have a question for our guest?
Well, a number of comments. First, Mrs. Schlafly, I'm a big fan of yours, and I think you helped motivate me to try and make a difference. In fact, I ran for political office myself in the state of Washington for state superintendent of public instruction. I finished second. And I retired as an engineer. I've been a school teacher as a substitute all over the place. And I have been somewhat appalled by some of the things going on. And I wanted to push back. And there's a number of places I think we have to be concerned. One of the things is what they're teaching our future teachers in the teachers' colleges. And that's a rock I wanted to kick over if I ever got into a position where of authority. Just what are they teaching it? You talked about Senator Ted Cruz. I was teaching social studies in one of the local high schools, and I heard one of the other social studies teachers was just gloating about some anti-Cruz diatribe. I guess the Houston Chronicle had written, and he thought, boy, they really even the papers down in Texas don't like Ted Cruz. And this is the mentality of the people who are teaching our kids. In fact, one of the schools, they had a picture of Che Guevara on their wall with the words "Hasta la Victoria siempre." And I said, "That's Spanish for I own everything, including you. And if you don't do what I tell you, I'm going to shoot you."
Okay, fine. Do you have any comments at all for?
Well, that's a really firsthand. Statement about what some of the teachers are learning, and that's very disappointing, and I'm sure it's true. And this is why I urge parents to pay attention, ask your child, get a report on what your child is learning, seeing if they're learning the wrong things instead of the right thing. Because in school today, it's not only what you learn, it's but what you don't learn. And some of the readings, I just had. I've had parents tell me that they had their fourth grader reading a book, and it was just a disgusting book with all kinds of off-the-wall bad things that these people were doing. And no fourth grader needs to hear that kind of garbage. And of course, they don't teach them anything about American history when they get into the upper grades. So, but the main thing is they don't teach them how to read in the first grade. And if you teach your child how to read, especially if you use My First Reader, it's an authentic phonics book, and your child will be able to read anything.
Okay, anything else you want to say, Ron, before we let you go?
Well, a couple of things. This new program to inculcate our kids with, the Fuhrer's latest propaganda.
You're talking about Common Core. This is
good. No, I'm talking about this preschool.
Oh, okay.
This daycare. In our less enlightened days, we would call stuff like that kidnapping. That's exactly what I would call it. They kidnap your kids, they have these Pied Pipers, and they're going to inculcate them with philosophies totally contrary to the philosophies or to the founding principles of this nation. By the way, one of the institutions I'm really disgusted at is the church. Well, they don't take a stand and exert any moral leadership.
Well, I will tell you, Ron, we've had a number of ministers who listened to our programs who've spoken out, and it's amazing how many of there were people planted within their congregations that got rid of them, and these ministers had the courage to speak out, and tragically, at least four I can think of have written to me and told me that they lost their positions because they did have the courage to speak out. And that simply reflects that the good people in the congregation didn't have the courage to stand up. What we need are people with courage. Here, I'm going to have to let you go because we're just about out of time. Parting thought, Ron, before we let you go.
Okay. Our kids are our future, and that's really important. Abe Lincoln said that. So did Adolf Hitler. So that's kind of a neutral statement. We have to be in there battling till the end.
Okay. God bless. Thanks so much, Ron. And basically, Phyllis.
And I do certainly urge all parents to really check on what your kids are learning in school. Look at their homework. Ask some real questions. Don't let the kid get by with answering, "Oh, nothing much, same old thing," instead of giving you really responsive answers about what they're learning, because you might be very surprised.
And I share with you, because tragically most people do not understand the schools today, funded by the federal government, are being used to turn the children against their families, to turn them against these concepts of America. They're coming to believe that it's up to the government to provide for the people. It is not up to the government to provide for the people in a free society. That's the way it is in a socialist society. And our schools are being used today to indoctrinate our children in socialism. Would you agree with that concept, Phyllis?
Yes, I certainly do. And also, indoctrinate them with the idea that we should look to the government as our benefactor, our provider of all goodies, and so forth. And that's not what made this country great. Our country was based on the nuclear family, where the family was very self-supporting. The father was the protector and provider. The mother, a stay-at-home mother, took care of her kids. And that's the way we made ourselves into a great country. And I urge you to go on my website, evilforum.org, for further information. And I do urge you to teach your children to read so they can bypass all this nonsense they're teaching in the school.
Eagleforum.org. Go there, you're going to get some wonderful information. And understand, ladies and gentlemen, that America was unique because, of course, our basic philosophy was that our freedoms came from God. And the function of government was not to provide for the people. People were to provide for themselves. Certainly the purpose of the federal government was simply to protect this nation so men could be free. We'll be back in a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, Phyllis, we've got about 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners tonight?
Okay. All right. Well, we've been talking about education, so I'll give some wrap-up on that.
I'm sorry, what, Phyllis?
We've been talking about education.
Right.
So I will give some wrap-up about what parents need to do. You need to find out what your kids are learning and not learning. You need to take charge of their education. You need to encourage your school not to adopt the Common Core testing system, which will teach a lot of mischief and a lot of silly stuff. And so I urge parents' control of what goes into the child's mind. And you need to do that by, first of all, making sure they can read, and then monitoring what they're giving them in the school.
Well, now, can basically a school refuse to take it and use the Common Core curriculum? Wouldn't they tend to lose a lot of their funding if they did?
They would, but parents are organized everywhere, and they're finding different ways to delay it or to throw out some of the books. They're required to buy books that are, as they say, Common Core aligned. That's a new word that we all have to get used to. Everything they do is supposed to be aligned with Common Core. And just you can make fun of a lot of the stuff they're giving the kids today. It's really, anybody would say it's just ridiculous.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I feel so sorry for our young people. But, of course, unless the parents are there to protect them, why they're going to become victims of this whole indoctrination program aimed at destroying their faith in God and family and country.
Well, yes, and we want them to grow up to know that America is the greatest country in the world, and it was a great country because it was based on limited government, belief in God, recognizing that our rights come to us from God, not from the government, and then exercise your right to participate in the process of self-government to get the kind of leadership we want.
Amen. Well, thank you so very much for being with us, Phyllis. I hope we can get you on again in the not-too-distant future. It's always a privilege to have you with us.
All right. Well, God bless you, Dr. Sam.
God bless you, too. Good night.
Good night.
And have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas. Dr. Stan, and we've been talking about the Common Core curriculum tonight. And let me just point out that we do have a DVD, a talk given by our good friend Barrett Schoes on Common Core. We actually have the book that Barrett wrote on the Common Core curriculum. You need to get this information so that you can intelligently discuss this effort by the elite in Washington, D.C., who want to control the minds and hearts and souls of our children and turn them against America. Turn them against everything that's worthwhile, take away their moral foundation. This is what's happening, ladies and gentlemen. Why do you think that 42% of white children and 72% of black children are born out of wedlock today? Because our schools have destroyed the moral fabric of our children. And this did not happen by accident. And the tragedy is that certainly they may go to church on Sunday, but they can't in 1 hour in church undo what they've done, certainly 5 days a week, 6 or 8 hours a day in the classroom. Basically, the purpose of education is to destroy the moral fabric of our society, which is why they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools, and why they simply, we're seeing the end result of this with increasing violence. And of course, what they say is, oh my goodness, take away the guns. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the people who want the dictatorship who've created the problem. What we need is people with more guns, but what we also need is people with a moral foundation. And what we need to do is have a great revival in America. And if a revival doesn't come, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just. And he's going to bring his justice on America. Well, this is the time when I need to tell you our telephone numbers, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We hope you want to get the DVD on Common Core. It's with Barrett Schoes. You'll want to get her book. We hope you want to get my book on the Brotherhood of Darkness, which takes you into who it is who's behind these people, who control both of our political parties, and are using the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a one-world government, and destroy our financial system and create a one-world financial system, and, of course, destroy Christianity. And that's what they're doing. They're working very hard at that. Why do you think that A&E, certainly this television channel, is so upset with Phil Robertson of the Duck Dynasty? Basically, he's talked about God, and he's talking about how homosexuality is wrong, but they wanted to take prayer. They wanted to take any mention of Jesus Christ out of the Duck Dynasty program, and they refused to do that. Why do you think A&E wanted to do that? because basically there is a conspiracy against God, and they control our television, they control most of our radio networks, they control most of our media. And if you doubt that they're controlled, we have a wonderful book written by a left-wing professor named Professor Ben Bagdikian, who spent 30 years studying the media. His book, The New Media Monopoly, you need to get it, The New Media Monopoly. Now, he doesn't understand the Brotherhood of Darkness, but he does understand the ownership, certainly, of the media. As of 2004. The New Media Monopoly is must read to understand the media is controlled. And then, of course, now, of course, Bill Gates is going out. A fellow who runs Amazon is going out. They're just buying up newspapers all across the country. And they're part of this radical left-wing establishment. And basically, the reason that they have the fabulous amounts of money that they do is because they serve a different God, and they're part and parcel. If you go into of this whole world occult movement, and ladies and gentlemen, this is not imaginary. It is really very, very real. I take their publications. I read their publications. They tell us exactly what they want. A one-world government, a one-world financial system, and, of course, to destroy Christianity and to enthrone a different God. And they do believe in a different God. They worship a different God. When you understand that this is a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, you can understand what's happening. We hope you'll support us financially. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. You can hear our programs there. You can get the telephone number, listen to our programs on certainly on the telephone. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection. We'll be back in a moment with William Greig. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Western and Christian civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, hopefully for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Greig. And William was formerly the senior reporter, writer for the a New American magazine. He's been with Republic magazine. He's a prolific writer. He has written a number of books. He's writing a new book, which we hope to have very, very soon. He's certainly certainly writes the Radio Liberty newsletter. You can read him certainly on the internet. He has articles that come out on a regular basis. He has his own radio program, and hopefully we're going to have William Greig here very shortly to talk about the things that are going on in America today. But certainly as we approach next week, and of course this is Christmas season, and basically of course what they're trying to do is replace God with Saturday. Santa Claus. They really want us to believe this is only about giving, you know, and gifts and having a good time and partying. But Christmas is how we celebrate the birth of our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, whether he was born on the 25th of December really doesn't matter at all. It is the fact that we honor his birth, and of course this is by tradition, but it is a wonderful thing to realize that we do have a Savior who was born, certainly, to give people an opportunity to have a close personal relationship with our Lord, and of course in his death, certainly by the shedding of his blood, he bought our salvation if we will accept him. And of course, how do you become a Christian? Why, of course, you accept Jesus Christ as the Son of God, and it is because of his promise that we have the opportunity to gain salvation. As you know, certainly the way to heaven, certainly is, many people think it's very wide, and many people are going to get there, but if you read the scriptures, why, the way is narrow, certainly. All of us are sinners, all of us have done things we shouldn't do, but we all have the opportunity, certainly, to claim salvation, but it's by our belief in our Lord Jesus Christ. And that's the reason for the season, that's the reason for Christmas, and we do hope, of course, that many of you out there will give certainly, think of that, certainly on Christmas Day, with all the celebration, with all the families, with all of the other things that are going to be going on. Remember the reason for the season, and that, of course, is our Lord Jesus Christ. And we'll be back here in just a moment, hopefully, with William Green. This is Dr. Stan, and with us is William Grieg. Hi, William. How are we doing tonight?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing well. Thanks once again for having me on as a guest.
It's always a pleasure to have you, and what are we going to be talking about tonight?
I think that it's really interesting to see the concentrated lunacy that seems to seize our culture, and it's not something that's incidental to the political realm, obviously. Culture is absolutely more important than politics. Politics, of course, deals with the organization of coercive power, but underlying that is the culture. And this past week, we've seen a really interesting juxtaposition here that illustrates to any honest mind the fact that there is a rigorously enforced orthodoxy on behalf of the cultural left. In Denver, in Colorado, it wasn't in Denver, but it was Colorado, This businessman by the name of Jack Phillips, who operates a bakery, has been ordered by the state government to set aside his religious scruples and provide wedding cakes for so-called same-sex marriage ceremonies.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. William, go right ahead. Certainly, the gentleman should have the right. Basically, there are lots of places you can get a wedding cake made. It doesn't have to be made there. And he feels very strongly that, according to his religious beliefs, that certainly same-sex marriage is wrong, and wrong according to God's views, then he shouldn't be forced to participate. And yet, of course, they're using the courts to force us to do things we don't believe in, and to take away our rights. Certainly, if I do not believe in homosexuality, but I think in a free society, if people want to be homosexuals, they have the right to, but certainly to force somebody to make a marriage cake so they can have a so-called wedding, there's no way that two homosexuals can marry. Marriage is a religious ceremony, and basically it has to do with reproduction, and there's no way they're going to reproduce. Go ahead. This is simply to try to get us to change our whole attitude towards homosexuality and towards God, and basically it is wrong. Go ahead.
The thing about marriage that most people don't appreciate now, because we're living a couple of hundred years after the Jacobin Revolution that changed all of it, is that marriage is not a political artifact. Marriage is something that antedates the creation of the political state. It's a covenantal relationship that has a specific origin and specific purposes. And what's the Jacobin Revolution, and unfortunately the doctrines that were thrust to the surface in that revolution began leaching into our own culture within a couple of decades. And so parens patriae, the idea that the state is somehow the father of the children, began to make itself known in the political and educational and legal culture here in the United States in the early 19th century. And with that came the secularization of marriage, the secularization of family life, brought into the political realm where everything becomes a matter of power politics. In this case down in Denver involving Jack Phillips, he owns a specialty bakery called the Masterpiece Cake Shop, is a really good illustration of how this works. The state of Colorado has a so-called human rights law that is enforced by the court system. And the courts this week ordered Mr. Phillips to set aside not only his religious convictions, which, of course, is the most important consideration here, but also his property rights.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with William Craig as we look and see, facing the background of this incredible decision that is going to force a baker to go ahead and to make a cake for a process he doesn't believe in. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly William is talking about this gentleman in Colorado who's being forced to bake a cake, certainly for a homosexual wedding, when he doesn't believe in homosexual weddings. Why doesn't he simply just raise the price up to $20,000, something like that, and say, oh, go ahead and bake the cake?
That's one way of approaching it. Of course, if you were dealing here with state bureaucracy, that's the sort of thing that they would do. Witness what's happened here with the fines being imposed on them. Hobby Lobby, because they have religious scruples against the provision of birth control as a part of the government-mandated company health insurance policy that would include abortifacients. They don't want to be underwriting the destruction of developing human beings, and so the government, under Commissarina Sebelius, has been threatening them with extortionate fines that would be literally millions of dollars in order to force them to accept the state's dictation regarding the operation of their own business with their own capital and their relationships with their employees, who are not forced to work for Hobby Lobby. In the case of Jack Phillips, you've got somebody here who declined to accept business, which is a property right, an indefeasible property right on the part of somebody who owns and operates a business, which is not a monopoly. Every time government operates something, it either cartelizes the market or creates an outright monopoly. That's not what Mr. Phillips was doing. Mr. Phillips operates one cake shop in a very progressive town that is literally laden with specialty cake shops that are competing with him. He decided to forego the opportunity to make a profit by providing a wedding cake for a so-called same-sex marriage ceremony. And in doing so, he offered a market valence here. He created a market valence that could be filled by any one of a dozen different cake shops in Denver. But the couple who made this request of him, rather than going out and finding a competitor and buying a cake from them, which is how they would operate in a free society if they were inclined toward individual freedom, they went to the government to try to break the will of this individual in asserting a property right that includes the right to dissociate oneself from a commercial transaction. And this past week, the state government of Colorado ordered Mr. Phillips to comply and to provide a so-called wedding cake for a so-called same-sex marriage.
Well, now, was this the state government, or was this a judicial decision?
It was a judicial decision in the state of Colorado.
And I think what was so significant is the fact that our courts have been infiltrated and corrupted, and they've planted people in our courts, and I fear even in our Supreme Court, who have political agendas and are using those positions. Certainly, if we really believe that the people have anything to say about it, if the people of a state, as they did here in California, vote to say that the Supreme Court, that the same-sex marriages are wrong, then where does the courts get off in saying, well, it doesn't matter what the people have voted for in California, why we know what's best? And basically, I'm very concerned about our courts today, William, because I think they're being used to destroy the moral fabric of our society because we have immoral people in our courts.
That's incontestable. I think that the court system for at least the last 50 or 60 years, as you say, Dr. Stan, has been one of these institutions that have been thoroughly infiltrated by people who are pursuing the classic strategy of cultural infiltration, assuming the commanding height of the culture in order to bring about a change in the underlying social social entity that is the society of our country in order to change the plate tectonics of politics, if you will. It's something that goes beyond politics deeply into the culture. In this case in Colorado, I think that there are two things that give the game away. The first of which, of course, is that the couple, rather than going and finding a cake from any one of a number of contending bakeries in the same market, decided to go to the government and try to punish this man for foregoing an economic opportunity. If you believe in freedom, you'd recognize that he's paying the price of his convictions by not accepting their business. And that's the extent to which these people who are offended by his convictions have any right to punish him. They quote-unquote punish him by taking their business elsewhere. That's not what they did. They went to the government and tried in Soviet fashion to re-educate him. The second thing that gives the game away is the fact that, if I'm not mistaken, this is still the case, but earlier this year when this became a matter of public concern, it was the case then, that Colorado didn't recognize so-called same-sex marriages. So this couple was going to go to Massachusetts in order to enter into this interesting little social configuration that they would call a same-sex marriage. So the official policy of the government in Colorado was discriminatory, and yet that state government was threatening this man with at least a year in jail and a huge fine for supposedly discriminating by simply not extending his business to this couple of customers, which is his, once again, insurmountable right as a property owner. Now, this took place, I believe, Tuesday or Wednesday of this week. And this decision was hailed by exactly the same forces of toleration, or tolerance, as they call it, who have also applauded the A&E Network's decision to suspend Phil Robinson from the show Duck Dynasty because Phil Robinson, in an interview that was set up by GQ Magazine for the specific purpose of getting him in trouble, simply reiterated pretty much standard and unexceptionable biblical teachings on the question of sexual morality with respect to homosexuality and other issues of that kind. I mean, it's not as if that's the only question implicated in the Bible regarding sexual conduct. I mean, the standard is very, very high, as articulated by Jesus. If you, as a man, look upon a woman to lust after her, then in your heart you've committed adultery. And the point that Jesus is making here is that we are incapable, absent God's grace, of being righteous. And this applies to all manner of misconduct. Sexual misconduct is a very important issue, but it's not the only one. It's not the only one that Mr. Robinson mentioned. But he was fired, actually suspended, which is pretty much the same thing, from A&E, from the most successful so-called reality television program, that's a term of art I don't much care for, in the history of that genre, because he had offended the indignation industry with his comments.
But I think what's so interesting, Steve William, is the fact that the people across America support Phil. And is it Robinson or Robertson?
Robinson, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, fine. Well, anyway, we know this as the patriarch of the Duck Dynasty, which is the most popular television program suddenly on television today. Why? Because it's wholesome and worthwhile, and it always ends up, certainly, when they have a prayer, and they mention Jesus Christ in that prayer. And basically, A&E had tried to get them to give up the prayer at the end, and then to take the Jesus Christ they've mentioned out of it, and they refused to do that. So now they've targeted him, and basically they want to use this to get rid of him. But there is a massive outcry across America, and a lot of people are saying, and I applaud them, and I hope people will do this, where they're going to say, we're not going to watch anything on A&E. We are going to blacklist A&E until you put Phil Robinson or Robertson.
Robertson. Back there. Yeah, I misspoke. It's Robertson.
Okay, fine. Well, don't feel bad because I do the same thing all the time, but my wife admits it. Go ahead.
But I do think that it's encouraging that people are threatening or promising, I think it'd be the proper verb, to boycott A&E. I think that's a very healthy development, and one of the reasons why we made the decision as a family about 13 years ago simply not to have cable in our home is precisely because of the way that it has become conduit for indoctrination, and it's become part of this seamlessly integrated effort to reconfigure American culture. And every time I have occasion to watch cable television, which isn't very often when I'm on the road, when I'm traveling and I'm in a motel room, I'll turn on the television and I'll sample briefly for as long as I can stand what's being offered on cable television. I always ask myself the same question. Has it always been this bad? And I guess the answer is no, it's not always been that bad. And of course, bobbing in this succulent sea of depravity is this show, Duck Dynasty, which, as you say, Dr. Stan, apparently consists of people who are entrepreneurial. They're conventional Americans with relatively limited ambitions that have made them very successful by providing something that the market really enjoys.
Well, they're multi-millionaires on their own. So.
Exactly. And they have earned that money not by liaising with government, but by doing something that the market has rewarded with success, and they're conventionally pious and conservative, culturally conservative, and unassuming. These are not people who are looking to do anything to anybody. They're looking to do things for people. And that, of course, is an outgrowth of the Christian ethos that that family is steeped in. There are some people who say that a lot of this is engineered. Reality television, as I pointed out, is something of an oxymoron. And there are people who are suggesting that there's a lot of stagecraft involved here in Duck Dynasty, and that a lot of it has been put on for public consumption. It doesn't necessarily reflect what these people really are and who they really are. I don't know if that's the case, but what I do know is that the fact that it is that successful illustrates that there is a huge audience, a huge marketplace for people who would relate to that particular lifestyle. In other words, that really is the default lifestyle, even today, of mainstream America. And perhaps what we're seeing here is a type of theatrical production where that lifestyle is being ritually execrated to serve the interests of the Gramscian elite who are trying to destroy what remains of conventional American civilization. I think that might be the case. Whether you're dealing in this case with somebody who is at least in some sense a scripted character or if that's the way he really is, the point is that many of the same people who just 4 or 5 days ago were defending a government crackdown against a businessman on the assumption that the government has the supposed right to dictate to that businessman the content of his beliefs and the extent to which he can act on his beliefs in the marketplace. The same people who applauded that just a couple of days ago after Mr. Robertson was suspended started talking about the sanctity of property rights as applied to the Arts Entertainment Network because they were doing something that resonated with their cultural and political prejudices. Oh, it's a business relationship. This was his employer. His employer has the sovereign right to decide whether to punish this employee for saying things that brought disrepute to the company. Suddenly, that became a matter of property rights, whereas he didn't have property rights as a defense in the case of the baker in Denver. And that's the old Leninist dichotomy at work once again. The question is who does what to whom. It's not whether what is done is right. The question is, does it benefit our ideological tribe or not?
But I think the other thing is that Phil Robertson has said, look, certainly if you want to lay me off, that's fine. If you want to take a certainly mention of Jesus Christ out of our program, that's fine. But we won't be there. That's our decision. We'll quit. And I think the thing that really is the most encouraging to me of this whole situation with him is that the American people are solidly with Phil Robertson, and they are suddenly boycotting, and they're going to boycott A&E, and I wouldn't be, suddenly I hope they're successful. I would like to see them go bankrupt because of what they're doing.
I would too. That would be a wonderful outcome. That would be the market doing what the market should do, and I think that we might see, and this is something that I would anticipate, we might see that other entrepreneurs in the entertainment industry, recognizing the huge audience, this, of course, is something that you mentioned, Dr. Stan, this is the most successful program of its sort in history. This is a family that has made itself very wealthy by providing something that people want to buy at a reasonable cost. There's a huge opportunity here for genuinely entrepreneurially minded people in the entertainment industry. So I suspect that what's going to happen is that somebody is probably going to pick up this show and perhaps build a network or expand an existing network to serve that underserved marketplace. And obviously it's a tremendously underserved marketplace. If you take a look at the way that primetime television with utterly execrable fare, such as Modern Family, which is nothing but a weekly homily about the supposed virtues of alternative family arrangements, such as so-called same-sex couples. You see this sort of thing constantly being pumped out into the guise of entertainment when it's more indoctrination than entertainment. There's a sitcom, I can't remember the name of it, it's set in Brooklyn at a police precinct, where the main character's supervising captain of this police precinct, played by the tremendously gifted actor Andre Brouwer, just casually makes mention of his quote-unquote husband. And, of course, he plays this police captain as your stern, stoic, almost indecipherably serene figure who's the very essence and stereotype of law enforcement or a military man. Rhyme-rod straight, by the book, never cracks a smile, apparently is utterly humorless. And this person who is the distilled essence of the masculine figure makes mention of his quote-unquote husband every single week on every single episode. The people who do these kinds of things are not simply entertainers. The people who write these programs are not simply producers of entertainment. Whether you're talking about people who are agents in place in the writing and production staffs of these programs, or whether you're talking about people in the network, and more often than not, it's people at echelons above the actual production staff of a television or movie production company, as I understand it, who make decisions of these kinds. They do get notes from the studio. They get the guidance from people who are involved in the administrative and producing this affair. And there is a game. There's a game plan. There's a playbook that's being followed here. I wrote about this, good grief, must have been 20 years ago. I first wrote about the so-called after-the-ball strategy, which was devised by a couple of very, very capable public relations people. It was entitled After the Ball, How America Will Overcome Its Fear of Gays in the 1990s, if I remember the name of that book correctly. And it laid out a schematic, a step-by-step program for programming, if you will, the public at large, using entertainment primarily.
Hold that thought, William. We'll be right back. Well, William is simply pointing out how television and radio, but primarily television, are used to control our attitudes, to control our prejudices, to alter the way we look at the world. And they do this through regular programs. You was talking about this one police program where I said that they had this captain or high official in the police department, suddenly very masculine, but he keeps talking about his husband. In other words, obviously, he's homosexual and he has a same-sex partner. But they do this every single week, and they're using that program to indoctrinate us that suddenly same-sex marriage is perfectly legitimate, perfectly all right. And basically, they do this in every way to destroy the suddenly the male figure. So often, males are suddenly a sort of critical individuals, and the women are usually the strong ones, and basically they try to alter our attitude towards life and towards God, and they try to undermine belief in God, and they try to undermine belief in everything that's moral and good, and we all have all these couples living together, and then of course now we're trying to popularize homosexuality. The media is controlled in America, and they are certainly doing everything they can to alter our view of what life should be, because these people have intense hatred of God and everything that's good and worthwhile and noble in the world. And they control our media, and they're using it for propaganda purposes. And once you understand that, why you can watch television and not be taken in. But if you don't understand it, they will actually condition your mind to go along with their agenda. Go right ahead, William.
I would emphasize that. I would make this a very important consideration when you're consuming entertainment. And one of the things you mentioned, Dr. Stan, at the beginning of this discussion was the fact that this is not intended to suggest that we would use the mechanism of government coercion to punish people who are pursuing that lifestyle. And that's not something that Mr. Robertson has talked about either. One of the things that I find most remarkable about all this is that he didn't say anything punitive. He didn't say anything in terms of trying to compel or coerce or rebuke or chastise. He said that there would be a judgment. You know, do not be deceived is the phrase that he used. Eventually, there are consequences for that. Some of them are temporal and some of them are eternal, according to the perspective of people who are believers in the Christian gospel, as I am, as you are, as Mr. Roberts. There are eternal consequences here. That's within the purview of the creator. That's not within the purview of the creation, if you will. And he's not talking about the idea of engaging in any kind of official persecution of people who are pursuing that lifestyle. That's not true of the people on the other side of the equation. That's the most important aspect of this conversation, is that the people who are manipulating the culture have political objectives in mind. And that objective is to create a climate conducive to the use of the punitive elements of government to reconstitute, to reconfigure people's thinking. Witness what just happened in Denver. That's a perfect example of this. And that happened just a few days before Mr. Robertson was forced off the show. Mr. Robertson will do much better because of the fact that he's got a larger business, a much more successful business in financial terms than Mr. Phillips in Denver will fare. Mr. Phillips in Denver is facing the prospect of financial ruin. And if he is faithful to his convictions, he does face the prospect of being sent to prison as a martyr for his faith. I use that expression in its specific original sense. When people talk about martyrs, they often think of those who were fed to the lions in the Colosseum, according to some accounts. They think of those who were persecuted for the name of Christ under the Jacobin rule or in Soviet Russia, or Pastor Abedini, who's in prison in Iran right now. They're all martyrs. The word martyr means witness, and the most compelling witness you can give for your faith is if you're willing to sacrifice something that's very dear to you in order to be true to your principles. So Mr. Phillips is a martyr. He's a martyr. He's been turned into a witness. I don't know what the extent of his price will be as a martyr for his faith, but if he's sent to prison, he will be a political prisoner. He will be as much a martyr for the cause of his Christian faith as Pastor Abedini is in Iran right now, for different reasons. I mean, obviously, the revolutionary government of Iran, the Revolutionary Islamic Republic of Iran, has not imprisoned Saeed Abedini because he was denouncing homosexuality. They imprisoned him because he was conducting worship services in a country that is ruled by an Islamic authoritarian state. In this case, Mr. Phillips would be sent to jail by a secular state that's just as intolerant and just as dictatorial because he's offended against its, I guess you'd call it, religious sensibility. And that might be a foreshadowing of what we're going to see unfold during at least the next couple of years and perceive into the foreseeable future, perhaps, because of this Ramsey revolution that's almost reached its endpoint in this country.
Well, I think it's so important that people understand that we have corruption in our courts. And basically, they have planted people within our court system who are not simply interpreting the Constitution. They're pushing a political agenda. And basically, ladies and gentlemen, we either take America back, we have a revival, we turn to our religious roots and our worship of God, or America, as we know it, will simply become a remembrance of things past.
And the storm clouds gather.
Ahead.
It's not just the courts where we see these agents of influence. We've mentioned what's going on with television networks, what's going on with Hollywood in general. There was an interesting discussion today on one of my favorite radio programs. The host of that program used to be on a television series called Babylon 5, and he was a very, I guess you'd call it closeted, you'd call him a closeted conservative. He ran as a Republican in, I believe, 2002 or 1990 to 1999. I can't remember which, but there was a special election held in California. And this fellow, whose name is Jerry Doyle, ran for Congress as a Republican. He's a libertarian-leading Republican. He was actually the only national radio host on a widely listened to mainstream network who endorsed Ron Paul in 2012, and I think that he was very congenial to him in 2008. But yeah, I think it was either in 1998 or 1999 he ran for Congress as a Republican. Up to that time, he'd been able, on the basis of a phone call, to go and get a job as a guest star on a movie of the week or made-for-cable television movie. $150 for about a week's worth of work. His agents, of course, got 10 or 15%. So they were very eager to hook him up. They were all very, very happy and in friendly terms with him. But after he ran as a Republican, suddenly these people wouldn't touch him. They wouldn't return his phone calls. They didn't send him any work. And what he was pointing out is that there is, if you will, sort of an informal cultural dictatorship in Hollywood. It's not just that they're allied to the Democratic Party institutionally, but in terms of their ideology, they're very, very far left. And Jerry Doyle, I should point out, is not a traditionalist conservative. He often makes mock of the religious right and even religious-leaning libertarians within the Republican Party. He thinks that's something that shouldn't be implicated in the political discussion in our country. But he was saying this with reference to what happened to the Duck Dynasty, with the Duck Dynasty controversy. There is this very heavily and rigidly enforced orthodoxy in Hollywood.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is William Grigg, certainly one of our favorite guests. And he's just talking about, certainly, the fact that there's a fellow named Doyle, Jerry Doyle, who is certainly had worked in Hollywood in the past. However, he was sort of banished from there after he ran for political office as a Republican. Because, of course, in Hollywood today, there is certainly a left-wing culture, almost a revolutionary culture. And they're using, of course, many of certainly of our movie motion pictures to alter our concept of what's going on in the world, and in many instances to turn us against God, family, and country. But Jerry Doyle was just saying, having to do with this issue as far as Robertson is concerned, and Phil Robertson's, the fact that he had certainly told A&E that, or he had actually given an interview to a magazine where he certainly did not believe that two men should be married. This was in violation of God's rules. He didn't believe in homosexual marriage. So go ahead with your story, William.
Yeah. What Jerry Doyle was saying is that it got to the point where these former friends, and not just professional colleagues, but people he'd considered to be friends, had turned against him and shunned him with such avidity that he decided to retire in 2002. He gave one specific example of a fellow who had been his agent for 10 or 12 years. I should point out that Jerry Doyle's got a very interesting bio. He was son of a Irish Catholic cop from Brooklyn, and raised in a very strong, devout Irish Catholic family, and he went to school at a parochial school there in Brooklyn. And then I can't remember where he went to college, but he decided he wanted to become an airline pilot. And then he parlayed somehow that career into a career trading on Wall Street. At some point, somebody noticed that he had a really striking resemblance to Bruce Willis, who's another very prominent, very successful Irish-American actor from that part of the world, although I think he's from New Jersey. And Bruce Willis at the time, this would be the late 1980s, was the chief attraction on a television show called Moonlighting. And there was an episode where his character went missing, and the idea was they had to find somebody to replace him. And Jerry Doyle was one of several dozen people brought in, supposedly to be cast or to be auditioned to replace Bruce Willis. It was just uncanny how much he resembled the guy. Well, what happened is that in order to get into Hollywood, Jerry Doyle had to create an interesting resume that had some kind of credibility as a show business performer. So among the other things that he put in his resume was that he had supposedly been part of the Harlem dance troupe, which of course is true. He's not from Harlem. And the Harlem dance troupe, as anybody knows, is composed of African Americans. But he was able somehow to get a foot in the door in Hollywood, in spite of the fact that he had no training, and he had a very successful career because he's bright, he's quick on his feet, he's witty. He at the time, of course, had something of a classic leading man profile and aspect about him. And so beginning in the early 1990s, he started to have a very good career, and he became very tight with an agent friend of his. And at one point when he was on the show Babylon 5, he was involved in a very serious accident that involved a shoulder dislocation and I think a broken bone. And this agent found out about it, and he was so concerned that he dropped everything and rushed to the set and made sure that Jerry was all right and said, I know what'll get you healed up, but he offered to buy him some matzo ball soup at a favorite delicatessen and just went out of his way to try to make sure that he was all right. In other words, their friendship was a genuine friendship. It was a concern that was rooted not only in the fact that Jerry Doyle was making this agent a lot of money, but he was concerned about Jerry Doyle as a human being. That's something that perhaps you don't see a whole lot in show business. But what he said is that after he ran as a Republican, this individual not only would not go out and hustle jobs for him, he wouldn't even take Jerry's call. Now, you're talking about the type of cultish conformity that you find in a totalitarian society. When somebody becomes an enemy of the party in a state such as North Korea, or when this happened in places like East Germany, you were expected aggressively to shun that person. Not only because it was supposedly the right and ethical thing to do, but in the interest of your own self-preservation, because there would be consequences. You could lose your job. You could lose your standing. Everybody who's part of your work group could be punished. In severe cases, of course, in states like that, if you're part of the ideological deviationist clique, then you can find yourself sent to prison. We've not quite reached that extent of tyranny in this country, let alone Hollywood yet. But what Jerry Doyle was saying today is that there are people in Hollywood who are conservative in their orientation politically, people who are God, family, country conservative, people who actually go to church, people who believe in God, who are Christians by way of conviction, who do not speak in anything louder than whispers about their true convictions. Here's another example. There's another actor of, I think, pretty much the same vintage by the name of Kevin Sorbo, who was very successful in the 1990s. Again, it's interesting how many of these people who are people who had career success in the 1990s. He was a mainstay on cable television. He actually played Hercules, the Greek mythical character, on a very successful long-running television series. Then he was in another science fiction series called Andromeda that ran for, if I remember correctly, 4 or 5 seasons. So he's somebody who's had a lot of success. That's a career. You have 2 long-running TV series. You're the envy of a lot of people. Well, he doesn't get a whole lot of work anymore because, wouldn't you know it, this guy who grew up in a small town in Minnesota is a very good family man. He's devoted to his wife, who's a lovely woman. He goes to church. He believes in God, and he's a conservative. He's not a Republican, I hasten to specify. He's a conservative. And he's been speaking out quite a bit over the last couple of weeks about his experiences in tones that are a little bit perhaps more pointed than those of Jerry Doyle, because unlike Jerry Doyle, Kevin Sorbo is a cultural conservative. And a lot of that takes on the same sort of plaintive note of disbelief about how you can get in trouble simply for saying things that most people in this country still believe, as if there's something criminal or disreputable about reflecting the values of the public who are the chief consumers of entertainment. Another conservative or libertarian-leaning conservative in Hollywood is Adam Baldwin. And once again, this is a guy who became very successful in the 1990s. He was in the film Independence Day. He was part of a short-lived but still intensely popular program called Firefly. He's been on a number of programs as a guest star. He is sort of your go-to guy if you want a tall, lean, tough-looking, muscle type of a character. The bodyguard. He was a bodyguard, a presidential bodyguard in the movie Independence Day, that kind of thing. Then once again, this man is traditional conservative, patriotic in his outlook, also a very serious Christian. And he's somebody who's had a difficult time finding a whole lot of work recently because he's become very outspoken, particularly about Obamacare and about what that signifies or portends for the future of our health care, for the future of individual liberty. It just once again strikes me, I find it so striking, how many of these people who are well-known and well-loved and have been very successful, people in that industry have talked about the fact that it is very difficult if you find yourself in the position of being a dissident, if you're on the outside ideologically, to maintain any kind of career prospects. But I think the important thing that they're all testifying to is the existence of this ideologically disciplined clique within Hollywood that is not only
extravagantly hostile toward the mainstream values of the American public. This, once again, is the public they're supposed to be serving, but also how these people do enforce discipline. And they're very collectivist in their outlook. These are people who may not consider themselves to be ideological, but they all assume that it is the proper role of government to be our parent. It is the proper role of government to distribute wealth in such a way as to take from the so-called wealthy and give to the deserving poor. Now, these are people who are not horny-handed sons of toil either. I mean, your executives in Hollywood live extremely extravagant lifestyles. There might be an element, perhaps, of classic wealthy guilt, you know, the guilt of the privileged class that motivates their politics, but they want to expiate that guilt by taking money from the rest of us who are nowhere near as well off as they are, and then spending it on these extravagant programs in social engineering and redistribution of wealth. But these are people who have a sense of vocation about using the power of government to bring about some kind of socialist utopia. And this would entail doing some really nasty things to people who are retrograde in their attitudes. So even as they're seeking our money, they're also seeking to use the money that they earn from us, that they get from us through their product, and plow it back into programs that would undermine our ability to make a living and to raise a family and to worship God, to live ethical lives as we're given wisdom to understand what is the right thing to do. And I think it's interesting as well the extent to which the Obama administration is sort of seamlessly interwoven with that element in Hollywood that is very hardcore, culturally leftist in its outlook, and once again, rather passionately hostile toward the public they're supposed to be serving. If you take a look at the marketing strategy being used by the Obama administration right now, there's some really interesting signals they're sending out about the types of constituencies they're playing to. One of the things that they did a couple of weeks ago was they had one of the groups that were not formally part of the administration, but a quasi-private group that was receiving federal money to go out and propagandize the public on behalf of Obamacare, had a songwriting competition where people were supposed to write music videos, write and record songs as music videos on YouTube, trying to induce young people to sign up for Obamacare rather than to pay the penalty. Why do they have to do this? They have to do this because this is a system that would redistribute wealth from the healthy young to pay for the retiring generation of people on the wrong side of 50, myself included. I'm in that group now, who would be needing services through Obamacare. So it's another intergenerational wealth transfer. Most of the young people, of course, would need Obamacare right away, according to the actuarial calculations behind this. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's the assumption. They're trying to get these people to enlist out of a sense of social purpose or collective responsibility. And the song that won was a very attractive young woman saying, don't worry about the price tag. In other words, who cares? It's just money. Somebody else will pay it. Sign up and just have faith in the government that everything will work out because our endlessly competent, omnipotent government is going to make things magically work out. There are a whole series of advertisements focusing on adolescent or post-adolescent bad behavior as selling points for Obamacare coverage. Some of them advertise, or some of them focus on the idea that if you're involved in promiscuous sex, then wouldn't you know it, Obamacare will help provide a backstop for you if you should find yourself contracting a sexually transmitted disease, you find yourself with an unwanted pregnancy, or if you simply need access to birth control. Obamacare will provide that. So sign up for this. Or if you're somebody who likes to drink himself blind, then Obamacare will help indemnify the cost of your misbehavior. That's the selling strategy they're using to promote Obamacare. One of the most recent memes of that sort shows a fellow with hipster glasses in pajamas with a cup of hot chocolate, and his face is radiating this expression of such self-satisfied privileged smugness that somebody who is from the Phil Robertson cohort of the population would look upon him and want to wring his scrawny little neck. And this is sort of the embodiment, pajama boy, I think is how he's now referred to online community. They're referring to him as pajama boy. He's sort of the embodiment here of young upper middle class or upper class privilege. You know, the sort of people who are supposed to be reaching out as evangelists on behalf of Obamacare. But these are all images, of course, that are filtered into the entertainment industry and that are used to retune the public mind with respect to certain customs and mores and certain social expectations. The thing is, the people who run Hollywood and the people in Washington, D.C. are really part of the same cohort. You know, they're very much on the side of pajama boy, and they're very much opposed to the Duck Dynasty people. The public at large, I think, at least the largest cohort, the largest plurality with the American population, are more on the side of the people with Duck Dynasty. That's why A&E is really taking in the drawers. That's why the Duck Dynasty clan has announced that they're going to be selling their merchandise without going through A&E. For all I know, they're going to start their own program. And at some point, I wonder if the federal government's going to step in and force the people from Duck Dynasty to be part of the A&E configuration, to force them back into the embrace of Hollywood somehow, because it just wouldn't do to let these people go independent and pursue an entrepreneurial course if they're going to be propagating social and ideological messages that the government doesn't approve of. And that really is the point of what happened in Denver right now. You do not have the right to your own opinions. You don't have the right to your own business. You don't have the right to your own property. The fundamental tenet of communism is the denial of the right to private property. That's what was upheld in Denver this past week. And what we got with the message with A&E is that you do have your right to your property, quote-unquote, your property, as long as you're using it to express the values and promote the agenda of our self-appointed social supervisors in Washington.
Well, I'm going to have to interrupt you there, William. Right now, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get your books, how they get your PayPal button, how they can listen to your radio program.
I appreciate that, Dr. Stan. My chief outlet is still Pro Libertate, the blog. freedominourtime.blogspot.com is the web address. Freedom in Our Time is one word. freedominourtime.blogspot.com, or go to Google, type in William M. Grigg, and Pro Libertate should be the first return. I try to post at least one essay a week, sometimes two. There's a PayPal button at the bottom of every essay, and I really do appreciate the generous help that we've received from you, Dr. Stan, and from many of your listeners. It's tremendously helpful and a great blessing to me and to my family. A lot of what I write is republished at lewrockwell.com, L-E-W Rockwell, as in Norman Rockwell, lewrockwell.com. My radio program, which is called Freedom Zealot Radio, is broadcast every Saturday evening on the Liberty News Radio Network. That's accessible at libertyroundtable.com, libertyroundtable.com. In the upper right-hand quadrant of the page, there's the Listen Live button. My program begins at 8 o'clock Mountain Time on Saturday nights, 7 o'clock California or Pacific Time, or 8 o'clock Central Time. Once again, libertyroundtable.com, Freedom Zealot Radio. I also have a YouTube channel, which is the Freedom Zealot channel. I can be followed on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Blarney Con Carney. There's a story behind that nickname. I don't have time to share it. And also William N. Grigg or William Norman Grigg at Facebook. You can follow me there. And within the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be publishing my sixth book, which is entitled No Quarter. And as soon as I find out more about the details regarding the publication, I'll share them with you and your audience, Dr. Stan.
Well, we look forward to that. And, of course, William also writes the Radio Liberty, a monthly newsletter. So we hope, of course, many of you want to subscribe to the newsletter and get this under William's thoughts. Our telephone number, if you'd like to order that, would be 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Certainly our guest is William Grigg, and always a pleasure to have William with us. William, hang on. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Well, Dr. Stan, once again, it's always a pleasure and a privilege with you. It's a blessing, and I do appreciate it. I appreciate everything you've done, not only for me and for my family, but for our country. And one of the reasons why it's important to immerse ourselves in the rather unpleasant business of popular culture is the fact that it is an all-pervasive phenomenon. You cannot escape the culture. That doesn't mean that we should use the instrumentality of the state to try to reorganize the culture near to our heart's desire. I think it means that we ought to withdraw from it, quite frankly. One of the things I've heard this week is some discussion of the possibility that, on account of what happened with Mr. Robertson over at A&E, you might see an accelerating exodus from the popular culture of people who are evangelical Christians, traditional Catholics, traditional Orthodox Jewish people. In other words, people who are still biblical in their outlook, who don't share the secular prejudices of the dominant media culture, which is still a minority in this country, notwithstanding the fact that they try to hold up a funhouse mirror to the culture and make it look as if what goes on these television shows, such as Modern Family, or in any way reflective, an accurate reflection of what goes on. So these people, ourselves among them, might find ourselves withdrawing from the popular culture and consuming culture that's more congenial to our tastes, perhaps withdraw our kids from government schools, withdraw ourselves from a lot of the civic organizations, or perhaps not even allow our children to enlist in a military that is now becoming a cockpit of social engineering. As of a few months ago, of course, it's becoming one of the major promoters of so-called same-sex couples' rights is the U.S. military. And this is being discussed as if it will be a horrible thing. I think it would be a wonderful thing. I see nothing at all wrong with the idea of seceding from this culture. You know, count me among those who believe in secession, whether you're talking about withdrawing from an incipient global government or withdrawing from a thoroughly secularized and depraved culture. There's something to be said from seeking out our own company and trying to live at peace with everybody and not using the instrumentality of the government to try to force conformity on people with whom we disagree. Unfortunately, the left is all about that, and things are probably going to get pretty ugly on that front in the coming year.
Well, I think it's going to be a very interesting year. All of our predictions, people that we know who we really have confidence in, say this is going to be a catastrophic year financially.
Yeah.
So all we can do is to get Peter to batten down the hatches and wait and see what happens. But I want to take this opportunity to wish you and your family a wonderful, wonderful Christmas. And we'll look forward to, now we're not going to be doing programs next week and the week after that. So we'll talk to you again next year.
Thank you so much. God bless you, Dr. Stanton. Have a wonderful Christmas.
God bless you, too. Bye-bye, and may the Lord be with you and your family. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope you enjoy our Friday afternoon, Friday evening programs with William Griggs, certainly one of the most articulate of the spokesmen we have for the conservative cause, who's given his life and dedicated his life to trying to educate the people about these concepts, this nebulous concept of freedom and liberty. And what is liberty? Liberty is limited government, and tyranny is total government. Of which way are we headed? We're headed towards tyranny, because there really are people out there who want to establish a one-world government, a one-world financial system, and certainly a one-world religion. They want to destroy Christianity, and that's what this old situation with Phil Robertson and A&E is all about, because these people hate Christianity. And basically, these people are reflected in most of our major television and radio networks across America. And it's about time we took a stand against them, and we supported the people who embrace our Christian philosophy. And we certainly blacklist and avoid those television networks and radio stations and radio programs and people who produce products and advertise with a corrupt and certainly depraved media. What we need to do is begin to support one another and certainly begin to look more and more to an understanding of the fact that there really are organized forces out there that are frankly Luciferian. And if you doubt that, simply go to the trilateral.org website. 87 members of the North American chapter, certainly David Rockefeller is the permanent honorary chairman of the 87 members of the North American chapter of the Trilateral Commission. Go to their website, trilateral.org, look at their logo, three sixes joined together, by an upside down broken cross. These are some of the richest and most powerful people, owning certainly our banks, owning our corporations, owning our media. They've got their people all names listed there. Look and see who they are and understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And quite frankly, we need your help. We need your prayers. If you're in a position to help us financially, we hope you'll join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, donate to or buy our products. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Of course, you'll be helping to support our network. We're 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. We do talk radio, trying to get people to understand what is really going on and the fact that there really are people out there, well-organized, fabulously wealthy, who are simply control our government and are using the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a one-world government. And right now we're doing everything we can, of course, to build up the radical Islamic world in preparation for a war in that region. And after all, we have to finance the radical Islamists. If we didn't do that, we wouldn't have an enemy. And how can you have a war unless you have an enemy? Why do you think the United States Army imposed certain constitutions on both Afghanistan and Iraq under Sharia law when the people didn't want that? Why did we overthrow the secular government that existed in Egypt and then impose a government on them under radical Islamists, and now, of course, is back under a military dictatorship? Why did we overthrow Gaddafi and, of course, made sure that he was tortured to death? And then, of course, that was a secular government there. The people didn't want a Muslim government, but now, of course, the radical Islamists are there. We're financing the radical Islamists in Syria. They can say all they want to, oh, we wouldn't do that. Oh, it's only non-lethal help. Ladies and gentlemen, we're funding, we're arming, we're certainly training the terrorists there, the Muslim terrorists overthrowing the government there. Maybe it's not a perfect government, but at least it protects the Christians. The people who we're financing are killing the Christians. Do you care? Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. We've killed 120,000 people in Syria. We've killed 50 to 100,000 in Libya. Do you really care? Well, ladies and gentlemen, we don't aren't involved in God. I believe is going to bring judgment on America. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Let us be grateful.